What's good, everybody? You are listening to Beneath the Frozen Sea, the DavyJonesLockerRoom.com podcast, covering the Seattle Kraken and all things related to them. My name is Sky, and before we talk playoffs, we gotta get into the corpse of this Kraken season and figure out what killed it. The 2023-24 season is over, and the Kraken are not in the Stanley Cup playoffs, which are already shaping up to be very fun. It's a damn shame, but I think if you go back all the way to the offseason in retrospect, you can kind of see where the seeds of this season's failure begin. In my opinion, it started with a number of depth players leaving the team to go off to different places, Morgan Geeky going to Boston, Daniel Sprong going to Detroit, and Ryan Donato becoming a Blackhawk. These were all guys who played about 10 minutes a night on the third and fourth line. It was not a tremendous loss in theory, but one thing I do think it did was significantly harm the ability of the Kraken to consistently create offense, because that's what those guys did. They were not always goal scorers, but they were always guys who would turn the puck up ice. They would create scoring opportunities through breakouts. They would create opportunities through these fast transition chances. While maybe their defensive aspects were less than optimal, or maybe they went through some cold spells, you could always rely on them to create opportunities for a team that kind of needed every line to be creating opportunities. The biggest strength of the Kraken in 2022-23 was depth. They scored from all four lines. But again, losing three guys plus Carson Soucy is not the end of the world. The kind of player that replaced all of those guys, on the other hand, that is the part I think you could take issue with. Pierre-Édouard Bellemare, Kaylor Yamamoto, Brian Dumoulin, all veterans of the league, all guys with strong defensive numbers, and all had very, very, very inconsistent offensive ability. And in Bellemare's case, an active deficit of offensive ability. Again, they're all fine players on their own, but they didn't fit what the Kraken's strength was. And as a result, it forced a lot of the offensive workload onto a second-year center who was due for a regression, and B, a top six that was due for a lot of regression due to how well they were shooting last year. They were shooting great, it was just a little unsustainable, and they didn't really have anyone that was considered a big-time scoring threat. Because again, they were trying to score using all four lines. What I think that Ron Francis was trying to do was hedge his bets. He figured that they weren't going to be able to boat race the other team into these 10-9 victories, these improbable one-goal victories where they were able to trade goals back and forth. I think he saw what had happened during the 2022-23 season where he couldn't really trust his goaltender and said, "All right, I am going to get guys who can do half the work for my goaltender." And then, as a nice surprise, his goaltenders actually showed up. Joey Decord had a 916, and while Philip Grubauer didn't exactly have the best year, it was a much improved campaign. The problem is, in getting these defensive specialists, these guys who are good shot blockers, good penalty killers, good with the puck kind of guys who don't really score a whole lot, is that it sort of coincided with some of the worst regression that I've seen in the National Hockey League over the last couple of years. There have been teams that are much worse, and some of them are even in conference, high Calgary. And that's just team-wide. I could not believe how offensively inept the Kraken became over the course of the offseason and going into the preseason, and then finally into the regular season, where they started at 3-7. They were taking on the Knights, they took on the Oilers twice in a row to start the season, they took on the Preds, but still, in each and every one of those games, it ended 2-1, 3-1, 4-1 was especially precious to the Kraken this year. And they kept going on these long losing streaks that just highlighted just how hard up for goals they were. And I do think it comes back to those decisions in the offseason. If you decide that you want to be a more defensively responsible and you get guys that are nothing but defensive specialists, you are going to have trouble creating consistent offense. And that's a bad thing when you are looking at, or all signs are pointing to, that your shooting is going to go down. And it's especially hard when you're trying to build a team out like that and you're expecting, okay, maybe some guys are going to start regressing and I'm going to have to deal with that. But at least I've got my number one center and he's going to be good and everything's going to be fine. That was not true. That was not true at all. Matty Beniers struggled tremendously throughout the season. The crispness of his passing was bad. His shooting, like everyone else's, was awful. And it really looked like he was a step behind. It was like watching someone play the drums and you could tell that they were doing something wrong with the cymbal. You can see they're out of tune. They're out of rhythm. And he was really struggling with that early on and into the later part of the season. He got better at it as he went along. He found a way to become useful, particularly with Jordan Eberle and Jared McCann, but they couldn't rely on him to be consistent offense. And that was bad because they really, really needed him to be. Because there were players who were having miserable seasons early on that improved. They definitely improved. But early on, we occasionally brought it up in the early part of the podcast this year. Jared McCann, to start the season, was scoring, but he was also unusable. He was absolutely unusable when he wasn't shooting the puck. Andre Burakovsky was constantly hurt. They really didn't know what they wanted to do with Oliver Bjorkstrand. Jaden Schwartz was having injury issues. While Jordan Eberle was pretty consistently good all season, he was having an awful lot of trouble hitting the back of the net or even hitting the net in general. It was just a boogeyman that kept following the team week over week. The inability to actively take advantage of the opportunities that they could create. And Matty having a down year was terrible for them. For lack of a better term, watching him play, you could just see that arrhythm follow the entire team around. They needed him to be the guy who stirs the drink. They needed him to be the guy who starts the play, sets the tone, etc., etc. And they just couldn't get that from him this year. And I really think it negatively impacted them, and you could see it impacted them. This all led into a terrible November and a mostly better December that did have a positive thing happen. One objectively positive thing happened, and that was they were really good through the last couple weeks of December, and then they went to the Winter Classic, they went out of doors to T-Mobile Park, and they kicked the Knights ass. It was a throwback to last year in all the best ways, minus the fact that they didn't beat the Knights last year all that often. They had this big long winning streak coming out of the Winter Classic, and it started to look like maybe it was genuinely just a slow start and they were going to get right back to where they were. And then they played Pittsburgh and all the old issues reared their ugly head again. Couldn't hit the back of the net, couldn't shoot, had a lot of issues trying to get to the front of the net, and they got dumped on. And that just turned into a four-game losing streak again. They still had a much better second half of the year than I think people are giving them credit for. February wasn't perfect, but it was better than December was. January wasn't perfect, but they still were competitive. And even with all the issues they had, they were still in the mix for a good long time. But then they get into March. They've already passed the trade deadline. They decided to sell Alex Wennberg. They didn't really move a whole lot of other pieces, and frankly, given the issues that they've been having, you'd have to have done a really creative sales pitch in order to get people enticed. But they were still looking pretty strong. They still had their issues, but it looks like they had metabolized their issues. And then they played the Knights on March 12th. They got up 4-0. The Knights roared back and beat them in overtime. And it was because of the same stuff. It was because of a new problem that I finally figured out was a sort of a smoking gun for the entire season. It wasn't just that their offense was bad. Their transition defense was awful. And a big part of it came because of their offensive ineptitude. They would, you know, squib on a pass, or they would flub the receipt of a pass, or they'd take a shot and it'd just bounce out and the defenders were not ready to potentially get back and attack the forechecker. And you could see it throughout that game against the Vegas Golden Knights. Their offense turned off, their transition issues became too great to bear, and they lost. And that felt really deflating. That felt like the moment where they learned that they didn't have it this year. And I think the team agreed, because after that point, it felt like the Kraken gave up. After that point, the Kraken go on a 6-game losing streak, then they kind of get back on track once they play the Ducks. And then they spend all of April losing. We don't have to go into specifics, just know that they were bad. And then we come to the end of the season and they do go out on a high note. They actually score a lot more than they had. but they're well out of the playoffs, and the smoking gun is 5-on-5 offense. That was something that they were otherwise fantastic at last year. There was regression throughout the lineup. There was injury throughout the lineup. Jaden Schwartz, Andre Burakovsky, and Vince Dunn spent a lot of time on the injured reserve list. Brandon Tanev spent some time on the reserve list. Philip Grubauer spent some time on the mend. The point is, everyone struggled. Everyone. Eli Tolvanen struggled. Jani Gord struggled. Oliver Bjorkstrand went to the All-Star game, and then he started struggling afterwards. Jared McCann had fits and starts throughout the season. Matty Beniers had a lot of fits and starts, the kind that you'd probably call your mechanic over. And they just couldn't get it together, and I think it all comes back to the fact that Ron Francis decided that this year they were going to try for a more traditional setup for their lines. First two lines are the ones that do all the scoring, and the bottom two are predominantly defensive specialists. And that's just not how the Kraken are built. And as if to just make that point clear, the guys who I think struggled the most were guys like Brian Dumoulin, Kaylor Yamamoto, and Pierre-Édouard Bellemare. Like, those guys are just too old and too ineffective to really support this team in the way they need to. They need to support each other's lines. They need to be able to feed off of the momentum of their forecheck. And if they can't do that, they're going to lose. And they weren't able to support each other this year. Is some of it coaching? Sure, I think you can definitely put, say, you could definitely pin a little bit of the inconsistent special teams, which were an issue all year, on the coaching staff. I think that they definitely need to significantly overhaul the way that they do that, because they've had this problem for 3 years now, and it has not gotten better. And for the most part, I understand why outside fans are extremely skeptical of Dave Hakstol. I also understand why in-market fans are extremely skeptical of Dave Hakstol. One of his big hallmarks is that his defenses are very passive looking. They're active, they're getting their sticks involved, but they still are very passive looking. And when they have a bad night, buddy, they look awful. But I've also seen what a good version of a Dave Hakstol offense looks like, and I believe in that. I believe in relentless forechecking. I believe in creating constant deceptive speed. I believe in relentless cycling. Those are all things that the Kraken were really good at just a year prior. And I'm pretty sure they can do that again if they just get a little finish. And as we're about to talk about in the prospect section, it seems like finish is coming. So right now, I'm willing to be patient with him. I understand giving him a shorter leash because it seems like he lost that team for stretches of the season that are frankly unacceptable. But the bones of a good team, like they were in the inaugural season, are still there. They just gotta add meat and guts to it. And good meat and guts, not just some plugs. I think we are all good with guys who don't score on this team. We have got plenty of them to begin with. And you know, to their credit, Dave Hakstol, Ron Francis, the team itself, Jordan Eberle, Matty Beniers, just about everyone who was in front of the mic and just about everyone who was in front of the mic at Locker Cleanout Day hammered it over and over again. They know that 5-on-5 is the issue. They know that even strength is the issue. They know that offense is the issue. And they're going to work on it. Now, whether or not that comes from promoting from within, because they've got a bunch of guys who are, in my opinion, ready for the show, such as Shane Wright, I don't know. Do they go out and get some external help? Because a lot of players are on one-year deals and they're going to need to get some NHL help. It certainly seems that way. Is the free agent class this year good? Meh, it's all right. Do I think there's going to be a lot of teams who try to join the free agent frenzy because they need to start moving players now that they have a little bit of cap room? Absolutely. The future for this team is bright. The issue that they're having is that they need to get it onto the current team, because right now it's not like dark, it's just kind of blah. There's nothing worse than being a team that's got a lot of blah to it. But there is light at the end of this tunnel. And frankly, if there's one thing that you can take from this season that I hope that Ron Francis is taking from it, it's that being the defensive team, being the team that stops all of these high-octane offenses that are in the Pacific Division, requires you to be, at the very least, decent at 5-on-5 offense. Because paradoxically, one of the things that people forget about this sport or don't want to think about in this sport is that just as much a good defense comes from having a good offense. And you can see it in the playoffs right now. The Winnipeg Jets didn't play a great game against the Colorado Avalanche, but they absolutely kicked them up and down the ice, and largely by hammering their bad goaltending. They had the puck for a million years and got a touchdown plus extra point. This is a sport where you cannot... Hockey is not a sport where you can separate the game into phases of offense and defense. Often they're happening at the same time. And I really hope that Ron Francis takes that lesson to heart, because it seems like the Kraken are really only built to do one part of it right now. They can be very easily a great team in this division. They can be a great team in this division pretty easily. The Pacific is very top heavy, and I think they could definitely make noise in the future. They just have to be willing to maybe make some concessions on what they think defense looks like. And right now, I think they're willing to give that a shot in the offseason. But still, even with as disappointing as the season was, I saw plenty of stuff that I liked, and the future looks bright for this team. It clearly looks like they have a plan going forward. Let's just hope next season it goes off without a hitch. Ron Francis had a media availability today after practice, and some very interesting stuff came out. A lot of it is just stuff you've already heard before. 5-on-5 issues were continuously hammered on. Vince Dunn was very injured. He had a neck injury in the late part of the season, so I completely understand shutting him down for the rest of the season. I'd especially understand being careful with it, because neck injuries can be very finicky. The big thing that I came out of this with was bafflement that Jordan Eberle broke his hand in the fourth game of the season, and he somehow played the entire season with it. It boggles my mind what NHL players are willing to play through. Just crazy. Otherwise, it was a lot of business as usual discussion. Ron Francis was very, very complimentary of Shane Wright. He doesn't see a reason why he can't make the team out of camp. They are still working with Ellie Tolvanen and Matty Beniers to settle up on a reasonable contract for the both of them. Let's hope that it is good for both sides. And as if he knew I was going to record today, he contradicted everything that I said about Dave Hakstol by saying that everyone is under review while they tried to come up with a plan. While they consider their upcoming plans. I don't think that means they're going to fire him. I think that they have given him enough leash. He is someone that they can trust, at least for the short term. But I do believe that that means he is going to be on pretty thin ice for most of next season. But if I'm wrong, you will likely see a bonus episode about Hakstol's firing whenever it happens. That said, don't think it's coming. It's just interesting to see. It also looks like it's going to be an active offseason for the Kraken. Ron Francis made it clear that if they think there is a good opportunity to pick up a free agent or potentially secure a trade, they are willing to use their draft capital or their prospect pool to do it. That's good. I want to see an opportunity for this team to try and compete meaningfully, even if it means that they potentially lose a good player like, say, I don't know, Cade Price, who's shown a lot of promise. Or Nicholas Cuckoo, who we're about to talk about, had just had a huge, huge change to his season for the better. Maybe even guys like David Goyette or Eddie Chalet, which would be crazy. But eventually you do have to make a decision on whether or not the future is now. And sometimes that means you have to sacrifice the future for now. That said, please keep Jagr Furkus. Please? And the Kraken will also be sending a ton of players to the IIHF World Championships being held in Czechia this year. In order, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare will represent France, Tomáš Tatar will represent Slovakia, Grubauer will go for Germany, Burakovsky will go for Team Sweden, and McCann, Tanev, and Alexiak will go for Team Canada. There were a number of other players that were considered, but only those have confirmed one other might go. Congrats to them on making their respective national teams, and good luck to all of them. All in all, a very interesting media evaluation. I think that this could set up a good portion of the next couple of months for the Kraken, good or bad. We'll just have to wait and see which direction it goes. Anyway, speaking of that bright future, it's time to talk about the prospects, and a lot of them are out of the playoffs now. Not Coachella Valley, though. They are waiting on their first opponent in the AHL Pacific Division playoff, They have got a first round bye. Don't get too excited about that. There are plenty of good teams in the AHL that could really trip them up, and the first round is a best of three, so they're not going to be waiting all that long. Still, good for them. Hope they use this opportunity to get healthy. I hope they use this opportunity to really make sure that all the young boys are ready for a tough environment wherever they end up going. And I hope that they just have some good practices. And also some good lunches, too. You really can have your day ruined by a bad lunch. Anyway, we at DavyJonesLockerRoom.com will be covering the second round of the AHL Pacific Division playoffs, because that's when the Firebirds actually start. But on to Canadian Junior, and several Kraken prospects are out. Starting in the WHL, Kelowna, out. Everett, out. That means Caden Price and Caden Hamill are done for the year. Hamill finished with 4 points in 9 games, and Price finished the year with 11 points in 10 games. Crazy. Sometimes it's just how tight the playoffs can be, but we're not done yet in the OHL. Sudbury, out. Kitchener, out. That means that David Goyette and Eddie Salle and Carson Rakoff, who just signed his ELC, are all out. Goyette capped out at 10 points in 9 games, Rakoff had 11 in 6 games, boy he was a busy bee, and Salle had 12 in 10 games. And yes, on the Far East, Andrei Loshko finishes his season, he had 11 points in 10 games. But that's everybody who's out. Who is in? Thankfully, the Furcus Circus still continues on in Moose Jaw. They're about to begin the Eastern Conference Final. He has 18 points in 9 games. Good luck to Moose Jaw and Jagger Furcus. This is where it gets really, really tough. On the other side of that, Tyson Jugnauth has managed to do some pretty good damage with the Portland Winterhawks there in the Western Conference Final. He's got 9 points in 8 games. Also surviving are the vanquishers of the Sudbury Wolves, the North Bay Battalion, that has Ty Nelson on it. Nelson has 7 points in 9 games. He's been doing pretty well for himself. Good luck to North Bay in the Eastern Conference Championship of the OHL against the Oshawa Generals. And finally, for a European prospect who is going the distance in the Finnish Liiga, Niklas Kuku has had a really weird season in goal. He wasn't really good with Oulun Karpat. He had a very bad World Juniors. I thought he had a very bad World Juniors. And it really felt like he was kind of struggling to find a place for himself to develop. And then he got loaned to Lahti Pelicans, where he went from a 900 goaltender to a 927 goaltender in just 10 games. And he has brought the Pelicans all the way to the Liiga Finals. Granted, the Pelicans have yet to actually win a game yet. It is crazy how even just the tiniest thing, like a change of scenery, can massively improve a prospect's development. Good luck to Kuku in the finals, and good luck to all Kraken prospects that are still alive in their respective leagues. And now that we've gotten the Kraken out of the way, we can talk about the NHL playoffs that are happening. This first round has the potential to be very good, and also the New York Rangers and Washington Capitals series is here. Look, I'm trying to be nice. I watched the Kraken play just absolutely god-awful hockey, and I can tell you with certainty then that the Washington Capitals suck. They are absolutely not built for this, and I cannot believe that they are in this. That said, I also don't want the Rangers to win because Jacob Trouba broke Andrei Burakovsky. I want neither of these teams to get anything good, so what I'm going to do is I am just going to ignore this series entirely and hope whoever plays the Rangers next kills them. Why don't we start out east? It's already got a great start with the Battle of Florida, Florida versus Tampa Bay. Both sides are pretty snarly in my opinions, but I have more personal baggage with the Tampa Bay Lightning than the Florida Panthers. So yeah, I'll say that the Panthers are going to win. I know that we have people in our audience who like the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I need you to understand I'm only rooting for Boston because it would be so funny if they won. It would be so funny if the Toronto Maple Leafs decided to do something absolutely idiotic in the face of this. I cannot wait to see how this turns out. I've already talked about the New York Rangers, Washington Capitals series. Don't care how that goes. I don't like either one of them. Just continue on. Finally, Carolina Hurricanes, they still employ Tony DeAngelo, which I feel like is a bit of a moral failure on their part. But otherwise, I just don't like the way that the Islanders play hockey. I feel like they play like a quarter of a good game of hockey. And as a result, yeah, I'm going to have to go with the Hurricanes. I think that the Hurricanes can be kind of annoying, but frankly, they just don't annoy me nearly as much as the Islanders do. Anyway, coming back out west, the Dallas Stars and Vegas Golden Knights. I hope that Dallas kills that team to death. I sincerely hope that the Dallas Stars bring nothing but the pain of a thousand suns down on the Vegas Golden Knights. God, I hate the Knights so much. I hate them so very, very much. I just can't stand them. Dallas. Dallas in four. Dallas in three. Dallas in however many it takes. However many I want it to take. Kill them dead. Meanwhile, we've got Winnipeg versus Colorado. That first game was awesome. There was no goaltending or any defense. It was just high octane, pure 80s scoring stuff. It was great. Loved it to death. That said, Colorado's goaltending was like really, really bad. So I don't know if this is going to be a great series for them. So I think I'm going to take Winnipeg. The next series, Vancouver versus Nashville. Nashville showed up in the first game. They really looked like they had an opportunity here. They looked like they were really going to start to concern some people. And then Vancouver found a way to win, which they've done an awful lot of this year. They really put their finish on their back, and they're going to ride it however long it takes. Also, Thatcher Demko was insane. So I think it's going to be Vancouver who takes this for the first round here. And then Edmonton versus LA. Meteor series. I don't want either one of these teams to win. I don't know. It would be funny if Edmonton lost, I guess. So I'm going to hold my nose and say the Kings. Yeah. Otherwise, if you have no rooting interest, this is a phenomenal first round. I cannot wait for it to get the last couple games of the Western Conference have yet to actively kick off. And once we get there, we will be really into the thick of the NHL playoffs. Cannot wait to see how it turns out. Of course, our coverage of it will be fairly minimal. We've got the World Championships and, of course, the Firebirds playoff run to keep an eye on. And that'll do it for this episode of Beneath the Frozen Sea. Thank you very much for listening. If you like what you've listened to so far, why don't you go on ahead and take out our written content over at DavyJonesLockerRoom.com. We will be running coverage of the Firebirds chase for the Calder Cup in the AHL playoffs. Don't miss it. And you can find Davy Jones Locker Room on most social media platforms as either Davy Jones Locker Room or on the microblogging platforms at Davy Jones LR _. And if you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Sky once again. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here for such a long, exciting season for both Beneath the Frozen Sea and for the Kraken themselves. Thank you a third time. Keep calm and post Zoidberg when we win. And as always, go Kraken.